Kyuichi Sionji was, as was common for the hour before lunch, bored. He'd agreed to take the 11 to 12 hour even on the days when he had morning classes, because his last morning class ended at 10:45, because he needed the money and didn't mind the work, and because it put him in close proximity to the Wedge and Morgan Deka when the time came to meet the others for lunch. But God, it was a dull hour to be working in the snack bar. No one came in. No one wanted anything. Nothing happened. Not that anything really interesting ever happened at Mini Deka, but at least somebody wanting some food would have been a nice change of pace. He was rearranging the snack cakes on their wire rack near the soda fountain when he heard somebody entering the room behind him. Brightening at the idea of a customer to break up the monotony, he turned around with his very best customer service smile on his face and said, "Hello, may I help?" "Oof!" was not, in fact, the last word in the prescribed mini-deka customer greeting. What he was supposed to have said was, "You." However, he found that very hard to say with a fist buried in his solar plexus, so he settled for "Oof!" while crumpling to his hands and knees on the linoleum tile floor and struggling to remember how to breathe. He raised himself upright on his knees, blinking tears of pain and surprise out of his eyes and trying to focus on his assailant, when she—he hoped it was a she—took hold of the sides of his lean face and pressed her lips to his in a warm kiss, as thoroughly unlike the punch in the gut she'd opened with as it was possible to get and still be two acts of the same person. After maybe 10 seconds of a smooch that would have been most satisfactory except for the part about Sionji still not being able to breathe, she released him and stepped back, hands clasped behind her back, to grin at him. "Hi, Kyuichi," she said cheerfully. "How've you been?" Sionji hauled in a breath and blinked furiously for several seconds. Then he dragged himself to his feet, arranged his rumpled uniform, felt gingerly at the tender spot where she'd slugged him, and managed to mumble, "Hello, Wakaba." He looked past her to see Utena standing in the doorway, looking somewhere between horrified and entertained. He guessed she'd been just far enough behind Wakaba to see the whole thing. "I'm bruised," he added lamely. "Good. You earned it," Wakaba told him, still smiling. "I'm fine, thanks for asking. The deputy chairman sends his love." Sionji cocked an eyebrow. "Well, okay, not really," Wakaba admitted. Sionji looked relieved. "Do you want something to eat?" he asked dryly. "Or did you just come in here to molest me?" "No, I came in here because I'm hungry," said Wakaba. "Molesting you was an unexpected bonus. Get me a cheeseburger, will you? Lady Utena is buying." Sionji smiled as he went behind the counter. "Been a while since anybody's called you that, Tenjo," he observed. "No kidding," Utena said. "The midget called you the Knight of the Rose," Wakaba told her, leaning against the sneeze guards over the condiment racks to watch Sionji cook her lunch. "Nice sword, by the way. You carry that around everywhere you go? Is that legal?" Utena nodded. "I'm in a club that..." "Knight of what?" "The Rose," said Wakaba. "Don't ask me, I'm just telling you what he told me. And I'm not going to call you Sir Utena, even if you are still dressing like a guy." "Thanks," said Utena wryly. "Shinohara," said Sionji. "Yes, Sionji?"
"Fries."
"Huh?" Sionji turned around, holding up a bag of frozen French fries. "Please don't make me ask the whole question," he said. "The cliché might kill me after that punch you gave me." Wakaba laughed.
"Sure," she said.
"What happened to him?" she asked Utena as he turned to put some fries into the fryolator for her.
"Long story," said Utena.
"Seems like we both got a few of those to tell." "Mm-hmm. I guess I'm going to miss my afternoon classes." Utena did miss her afternoon classes, secure in the knowledge that Miki Kaworu was taking notes so exhaustive that going over them with him would be every bit as good as being there. She gave Wakaba a guided tour of the WPI campus and its environs instead. As they walked, the two girls talked, trading facts, until finally, as they watched the sun set over Worcester from the retaining wall of the little parking lot in front of Bancroft Tower, each felt fairly confident that the other was fully caught up. It was kind of a strange experience for Utena to bring Wakaba up to date, stranger than doing so for Caitlin, because for a lot of the important events before Utena's departure from Sephiro, Wakaba had been around. She just hadn't noticed. The look of dawning horror on Wakaba's face, as the context around various things she'd witnessed was filled in, was almost as unnerving as filling in that context in the first place. Utena felt quite shaken by the time she'd finished. For a moment, she and Wakaba both sat silent, looking out over the lights of Worcester as they came on in the gathering night. Then Wakaba moved a little closer, put her arm around Utena's shoulders, and said quietly, "I'm sorry, Utena. I wish I'd been paying better attention. If I hadn't been so wrapped up in my own little world, maybe I could have done something to help." She shivered. "God, that's why that picture made me feel so sad. It's like somehow I knew, but I didn't want to." Utena slipped her own arm around Wakaba and hugged her a little. "It's okay," she murmured. "There was no way you could have known. That was the whole point, for everything to look normal from the outside." She sighed, a long, shuddery sigh, shed a single tear, and then said, "I'm just glad you got out in time." She chuckled bitterly. "Wised up quicker than I did." "I had help," said Wakaba. "Nobody helped you. Nobody at all. Not even Himemiya. I don't understand that, if everything else you say is true." Utena shook her head. "Don't blame Himemiya. She thought it was what I wanted. Hell, so did I at the time, kind of. Well, perspective wasn't her strong suit. I don't think she was quite all there until the very, very end." They sat in silence for several minutes, until the darkness of night was fully settled over Worcester. "Let's talk about something nicer," said Wakaba. "Sure," Utena replied with a weak but brave laugh. "Okay. Your roommate, Caitlin. You must have been an almighty mess when you first got here. She pulled you through it, didn't she?" Utena nodded. "Absolutely," she said unhesitatingly. "I owe Zona a lot for getting me set up, but without Kate, I'd have been doomed. I'd never have made it to Christmas. Literally, she saved my life. She's been the best friend I could have hoped for. I'm sorry." Wakaba gave her friend another squeeze as Utena threatened to become morose anew with guilt. "It's okay," she said. "Really, don't be sorry. I understand a lot of things better than I did the last time." She chuckled, gave Utena a little shake, and said, "I won't go nuts and try to kill her, I promise." That drew another laugh, if a bit weak, from Utena. "Well, that's a relief," she said with a wan grin. "So," said Wakaba, briskly changing the subject again, "tell me what happened to Sayanji." The laugh was stronger this time. "He got laid." "What?" Wakaba slid sideways a bit, out of Utena's embrace, and glowered at her in the dark, hands on hips again. Utena rubbed at the back of her neck, grinning wryly, and said, "Well, it's true. There's more to it than that, but I wanted to hear you go, 'What?' so I had to oversimplify it." "Explain," said Wakaba sternly, so Utena gave it the old Worcester prep try. "So it wasn't just that he got laid," she finished, "but that was part of it." "And now she's seeing Miki,"
Wakaba mused. That's... ow. I don't think I can get my head around that part. Ow.
They'll get used to her, said Utena. Then she added under her breath, or you'll have a psychotic episode.
Wakaba chuckled. She sounds interesting. However she did it, I'm glad she was able to help him get over being such a bastard.
She laughed again, more of a giggle this time, and added, if I'd known that was all it'd take, I'd have jumped him myself when he lived with me.
I'm, not sure that would have been such a good idea at the time, Utena said.
I know, I'm just making a dumb joke. If you can't laugh at your past, it'll screw up your future. That's my new philosophy, Wakaba declared with a firm nod.
Utena considered that, then smiled. I like that, she said, and they laughed at their pasts together for a moment.
When they'd finished that, Wakaba looked momentarily thoughtful, then said,
so if she dumped him, he's not seeing anybody right now?
She didn't really dump him. They were never together in the first place, said Utena.
Whatever, said Wakaba. Is he or isn't he?
No, said Utena.
Why? You're not seriously thinking of going after him again, are you?
Maybe, replied Wakaba coyly. You said yourself he's not a total creep anymore.
Well, yeah, I guess, but I don't know, I just can't see it.
Well, I can't see you marrying Himemiya either, so I guess we're even. You know, I was kidding all those times I called you my boyfriend.
Utena looked a bit sheepish again.
I told you it's complicated.
I know, Wakaba said with a laugh. She turned, hopped down from the wall, and clapped her old friend on the shoulder. I just like yanking your chain, that's all.
Say, she went on as Utena jumped down and the two of them set off back down Bancroft Hill.
If you don't think I should go after Sayanji, what about that Corwin guy? He sounds nice, and if you're taken...
Wakaba, said Utena testily.
Kidding, Wakaba repeated.
Sheesh, lighten up. I haven't even met the guy yet. Does he seriously own Arisugawa's roommate?
Wakaba spent the evening in Morgan 412, leafing through Caitlin and Utena's photo albums and laughing at the funnier pictures. Sayanji and the two moose at the Toronto Zoo, for instance.
Yeah, Sayanji was really into the whole moose thing, said Utena, grinning. He's got a whole album that's just full of pictures of the Toronto moose. I wouldn't be surprised if he managed to get them all over the course of the week.
Wakaba chuckled and turned the page. The first picture on the next page was of Utena and a black-haired, decent-looking guy about Miki's age. They were both dressed in jumpsuits, emblazoned with NITMCC, and covered in brightly colored patches advertising various motorsports-related products, and had helmets tucked under their arms. They were standing in front of a squarish little red-and-white car, which matched their jumpsuits and markings and coloration, and both were grinning cheerily and making V for victory gestures at the camera.
Who's this? Wakaba wondered, pointing.
She was lying on the floor next to the bunk beds, propped up on her elbows, feet kicking aimlessly in the air as she perused the albums.
Utena leaned over from where she sat on her bed, studying for tomorrow's introductory Klingonese 4 test, and said,
That's Corwin. That's his uncle's Evo 3X in the background.
Let's see... Yeah, that was taken on Monday morning, right before we started. You can see that the car's not dirty yet.
Or dented, she didn't add aloud.
Huh. Not a bad-looking guy, Wakaba mused.
He's a little young for you, but he'll grow out of that.
Will you quit it? Utena asked irritably. We're not dating or anything. We're just friends.
Sure, said Wakaba, dropping it. Who's this here?
Huh? Oh, that's Corwin's Uncle Keiichi. He's an engineering professor at Nokomi Tech, faculty advisor of the Motor Club.
No way. That guy's a college professor? He's maybe Sayanji's age.
Actually, he's something like 300 years old, Utena told her. Something to do with his wife. He's married to a Norse goddess.
Wakaba gave her a very skeptical look. No, I swear it's true. This is a really weird world, Wakaba, but it's got lots of cool stuff in it. Corwin's aunt is the Norse goddess of fidelity. His mother's the goddess of technology. And what does that make him the god of? Well, nothing yet, Utrinna replied. He has to take some kind of a test to get a spot in the Pantheon, and he's not old enough yet or something. Are you serious, or is this some kind of mess with Wakaba's head thing? Cross my heart and hope to die, said Utrinna. Isn't it all true, Kate? Mm-hmm, said Caitlin absently from her desk, where she was perusing something on the web. So if Corwin's your brother, said Wakaba slowly, pointing to Kate, and his mother's a goddess, then... No, said Utrinna, it's a little more complicated than that. Look, give me the... Kate, where's the album for Last Christmas? That's got the group shot in it. At 10, having digested the complexities of Caitlin's clan, Wakaba announced that she ought to be leaving the roommates to their beauty rest. She waved off their offer of temporary lodgings, informing them that she had an angle, and would most likely see them at breakfast in the morning. A hug and a kiss on the cheek for Utrinna, a grin and a handshake for Kate, and she was off, whistling merrily to herself as she trotted down the hallway toward the stairs. At the stairway door she turned, waved cheerfully, then disappeared.
She's taking it well, Kate observed as she and Utrinna re-entered Morgan 412.
Utrinna nodded. Deep down, Wakaba's always been pretty centered. She also had the advantage that she knew she was coming here. She didn't have all that much advance notice, but at least she didn't go to bed one night and wake up in another world. Still, I'm going to keep an eye on her for a little while. Sometimes she's so cheerful it's hard to tell what she's really feeling.
Kate nodded, a thoughtful look on her face, and then went to her bureau and got out a set of pajamas.
Utrinna stood by the foot of the bunk beds with a pensive frown while Kate changed into the pajama pants, then pulled the body of her Beauxbatons Academy sweatshirt over her head.
Kate? Utrinna asked quietly.
Hmm? Caitlin replied, glancing back over her shoulder, her arms still in the sweatshirt's sleeves.
Are you mad at me?
Kate looked puzzled, finished changing into her pajama top, then said,
No. Why?
Well, when I was introducing you to Wakaba, I kind of stumbled. I was afraid maybe you thought I was, I don't know, ashamed that you're my best friend or something. It's just that Wakaba was, for a long time, and I didn't want to hurt her feelings. But I hadn't thought it all the way through before I got to that part, and you haven't said much since then, and...
Kate shook her head.
No, I figured it was something like that. I hope she doesn't resent me.
She buttoned her pajamas, looking a bit sheepish and a bit sad as she went on.
I've been keeping quiet, well, quieter than usual, for fear that she would. There was that time you told me about.
Utrinna smiled in relief.
Oh, phew. Well, don't worry about that. She's really grown since then. I'll say this for Otori Academy, she added with a bitter-flavored wryness. If you survive, it makes you stronger.
Kate grinned a little and said,
Maybe she and I should duel for you.
Utrinna's face tightened slightly. She looked Caitlin in the eye and told her seriously,
Kate, you'll never have to fight for my friendship.
Kate nodded solemnly, dropping the joke in an instant, and said,
I know.
Utrinna, still looking uncommonly pensive, went to her own bureau and changed into her own pajamas. Then she switched off the overhead light and crossed back to the stack of beds. Caitlin, standing next to the ladder up to her top bunk,
was silhouetted by the glow of the quad lights through the blinds on the windows behind her. She took off her glasses and put them on top of her bureau. As she moved to mount the ladder, Utina put out a hand and placed it on her shoulder, stopping her. Kate made an inquisitive noise, stepping off the bottom rung and turning to face her roommate, and Utina gathered her up in a hug that had an edge of something like desperation in it.
"Wakaba and I caught each other up," she explained quietly, "which means I had to tell her about, well, everything. It doesn't get any easier to talk about, does it?"
Kate put her arms around her roommate, patted her back, and murmured,
"No, no, it doesn't.
She held on for a moment, then asked,
"Are you going to be okay?"
"I think so," Utina replied. Then she chuckled wryly, released her roommate, and added, "These damn beds are too narrow anyway." Kate recognized a brave face when she saw one. She smiled a little, climbed partway up the ladder, rummaged around on her bunk, and, descending, pressed a fuzzy something into Utrina's arms.
"Just in case," she said.
Utrina ran a hand over the item she'd been handed, feeling threadbare terry fur, yarn whiskers and button eyes, and smiled. It wasn't just anybody Kate would entrust with her beloved childhood companion, Seven the Tiger.
"Thanks," she whispered, with total sincerity. Kate smiled, patted her shoulder, and climbed up into her bunk.
Good night, Utina," she said.
"Good night, Kate," Utina replied, tucking herself in with Seven.
Say, Kate murmured after a few seconds of silence.
"Huh?" said Utina, who was already partway to dreamland.
I wonder what Wakaba's angle is.
Kyuichi Sayonji lay on his bed in Institute Hall's room 301, a small but comfortable single room at the front corner of the building, reading a large, bright green book and thinking about going to sleep pretty soon. Wednesday was lab day, and as he wasn't taking any lab sciences this term, that meant he got to work the full morning shift at Minideka. It wasn't much of a job, but it paid for things. Sayonji didn't resent not having been handed comfortable means, like Utina or Miki, or outright wealth, like Juri, upon his arrival in this world. He'd been offered either, in fact, by Edward Tavruski and by Caitlin's family via Utina, but he'd passed them up. After years of feeling beholden to the deputy chairman, the academy trustees, and Toga, he was enjoying his newly won independence too much to accept those offers, even though he was certain they were offered in a different spirit. Besides, he rather enjoyed the irony involved in cooking Utina Tenjo's breakfast almost every morning. He yawned, marked his place in the big green book, and put it on his nightstand, then got up and took off his shirt. Bedtime. Tomorrow he could... A knock at the door? At 10:20 in the evening? Who could that be? If it was the campus crusade for Kalidor, they were going to get a very stern talking to. He went and opened the door, fully prepared to bawl out a grinning twosome in plus fours, and instead found himself faced with a uniformed girl carrying a sword. Sayonji blinked.
He said. "Good evening, Shinohara."
"Evening, Sayonji," said Wakaba as she brushed past him into the room. "How are things?"
Fine. He said, perplexed, as he closed the door behind him.
"Is there, something I can do for you? It's almost 10:30, and..."
"Yeah, I know," Wakaba told him. She noticed the big green book and asked, "What you reading?"
"It's the maintenance manual for my motorcycle," he said. Wakaba raised an eyebrow.
"You have a motorcycle?"
"I bought it last week," Sayonji replied. "Tenjo and Caitlin's brother Corwin helped me get it running over the weekend."
Wakaba looked mildly impressed.
Cool, she said. Listen, I need a place to crash. Sound familiar?
Sayonji stared at her for a second, then snickered, the corner of his mouth tugging up into a little grin despite himself.
Very familiar, he said.
Then he went to the closet, pulled out the spare blankets and pillow that Corwin Ravenhair generally used when he stayed here, and arranged them in the usual spot on the floor.
You're not actually going to be chivalrous enough to offer to sleep there and let me have the bed, are you? Asked Wakaba skeptically.
Sayonji smiled a little more fully and said,
No.
Good, said Wakaba. She took off her shoes, put them in the corner next to his, took her sword out of her belt, and laid it on the floor next to her makeshift bed.
Where did you get that? Sayonji wondered.
Present from the deputy chairman, she replied, unfastening the collar of her jacket. You may be pleased to learn that I proceeded to whip up on his butt with it.
She paused, looking perplexed, and then raised an eyebrow and went on as if she couldn't really believe it.
This morning, your time. Man, no wonder I'm tired. I've been up for almost 24 hours.
She yawned, stretching, and took the ribbon out of her hair.
Sayonji stood by the door with his arms folded across his chest, smiling at the rare sight of Wakaba with her hair out of its customary onion style, and asked,
Aren't you going to point threateningly at it and warn me not to get any funny ideas?
Nope, said Wakaba, unbuttoning the rest of her jacket.
Funny thing, isn't it?
She regarded him with steady eyes and said, You were a bastard to me. You hurt me, you betrayed me, you broke my heart on purpose just to get back into the academy.
Sayonji looked back at her gravely and nodded. I did all that, he said softly. I don't deny it.
But even so, you never did the one thing that would have made it hardest to bear, Wakaba went on. Even when you were living with me, when I was practically throwing myself at you, you never took advantage of that. You could have had me so easily. You could have made me another conquest, a notch on your gun belt. And you didn't.
That was always Toga's style, said Sayonji softly. Not mine.
Wakaba nodded. Maybe it's because of that. Maybe it's because of all I've been through in the last few weeks, how close I came to becoming a notch on somebody else's gun belt today. Maybe now that I've really seen the ugliness inside that kind of person, I can appreciate the grace you had to leave me my pride even when you knew you were going to break my heart. I don't know, but I feel safe here. I don't feel like I have to sleep with one eye open.
Thank you, said Sayonji, but Wakaba held up a hand and silenced him, still thinking.
She stood and thought for a moment more, then went on in a quiet voice.
I don't know that I've forgiven you, Kyuichi. I don't know if I ever can completely. But I think I can learn to trust you again. I think I can be your friend and let you be mine, if you want that.
Sayonji smiled.
I'd like that, he said. I'd like that very much.
Then he flicked off the light, plunging the room into blackness.
Good night, Shinohara, he said, climbing into bed.
He heard the clinking and rustling as she took off the rest of her uniform and folded it beside her makeshift bunk, then crawled into the blankets and arranged herself.
Good night, Sayonji, she said.
Wakaba spent the next day lounging around the wedge, reading Miki's updated copy of So You've Just Arrived from a Parallel Dimension. The night before, during the perusal of the photo albums, Utena and Kate had gathered some personal statistics from her, taking a moment to work out her birth date on Earth's calendar, which wasn't very hard, and at lunchtime she found out what for. Kate's father, a pleasant and youthful-looking fellow, who Wakaba was given to understand was some kind of galactic policeman or some such, stopped by and gave her a folder full of useful documents. Passport, driver's license, Psi-Cor null certification card, bank card from the WDF credit union, and so forth. When Caitlin and Utena were done with their classes for the day, they took her down to the Worcester Galleria to do a spot of clothes shopping, since, like all the rest, she had only the clothes she'd arrived wearing, and that would never do. It was much too late in the school year for Wakaba to enroll as a student at the Worcester Preparatory Institute. This was the second of D-term's 8 weeks, after which the academic year would be over. She did, however, meet with Dean of Students Claudia Montaigne on Wednesday, and tested, with the help of an all-night cram session with Miki Kaworu, into the class of 2407 the following year. In order to get acclimated, she was given permission to audit Utena's classes for the remainder of D-term, but would receive no credit for them because of her late start. Friday came, and after the end of the day's classes, the Art of Noise, grinning with anticipation of the year's last show at Sneaky D's, packed their things aboard Moose McEachern's battered ex-school bus, euphemistically termed the van. Over dinner at Table 11, the band gathered to talk about the playlist and discuss their itinerary for the next day. Miki, you'll be running the board for us again? Caitlin inquired. Miki stopped his watch and nodded. Although, he pointed out, if you want me to help you with that one song, it'll have to fend for itself for a little while. How's Edward's little project coming along? Utena wondered. Have you heard anything from her lately? I got email from her about it the other day, said Azalin. She says everything is going extremely well, but we shouldn't be alarmed if some stuff sort of stops working sometime in the next week or so.
Oh, that's reassuring, grumbled Moose. So, who have we got going on this trip anyway? The five of us, Miki, Dorothy. Utena, are you going?
Of course, Utena replied. With a tremendous effort, she snapped an oatmeal raisin cookie in half. Then she eyed the cross-section dubiously and put the pieces carefully in the far corner of her tray. How would you guys get by without your beautiful and talented road crew? She asked with a grin. I'd like to go too, said Wakaba. It sounds like fun.
Rumbled Moose. That's 9 people. There aren't enough seats for 9 in the van. Not comfortably, anyway.
Kate has a car, Utena pointed out.
Said Caitlin. I'd rather keep the band together before the show, though. Keeps us more connected or something.
She smiled. You've got your license now, though. You could drive. So could Dorothy.
Well, if you're sure. Kate nodded. You learn from some of the best, she said, grinning. I think you can handle it.
Okay, then, said Utena. Shotgun, Wakaba chirped cheerily. I suppose I'll take the back, then, Dorothy said, if you don't mind.
Not at all, said Utena. Kate, you'll have to write me a note to bring her through customs if you're not coming with us.
Kate nodded. I'll do it after dinner, she said.
The next morning they were off, the band and Miki in the bus and the beautiful and talented road crew in Vlad the Impala. It was a beautiful spring day, continuing to show 2405's apparent determination to start as nicely as possible. And the crew hardly needed the convertible's climate management field as they sped westward across Massachusetts and upstate New York. According to tradition, they all stopped at Lakeside Farms in Ballston Lake for lunch and donuts. They had no trouble at customs, and by 6 o'clock they were in Toronto. This time they had no difficulties finding the club at the corner of Bathurst and College. By 7:30 they were just about set up, and the place was just starting to fill. Caitlin, standing on the darkened stage, fiddling with the settings of one of her several keyboards, glanced out across the room. It was funny how a place visited only 2 or 3 times could become so familiar, if it was a place with fond associations. The Brasserie Dauphine in Paris was the same way. This slightly stuffy, wood-paneled room, its walls covered in hockey memorabilia,
with the bar at the far end and the broad, slightly creaky hardwood floor, was almost like a familiar living room as she regarded it from her usual playing position. She went around to the front of the keyboards, stepped over the row of monitor speakers at the front of the stage, and looked down into the small pit below, where Miki Kaworu was bent over the mixer board. "How's it look?" she asked him. He looked up, pushing his headphones back from his ears, and gave her a smiling thumbs up. "Pretty good. I'll run a test during sound check, but I'm fairly sure we'll be able to get a good recording from this setup." Kate grinned. "Good," she said. "We haven't done a live record, and I have a feeling about this show." "Anything I can do to help?" a voice asked from the edge of the dance floor, just behind and above Miki's head. The blue-haired engineer turned and looked up as Kate adjusted her own view to see the speaker. Then both blinked in surprise. "Corwin," said Kate. "What are you doing here?" Before Corwin Ravenhair could answer, he was spotted and asked the same question by Utena, who trotted over from the merchandise table she and Wakaba were setting up to grab him up in a hug and ruffle his hair. "Where's Nall?" she added as she released him. "Alfheim," Corwin replied. "Business with the Draconian Senate." "Oh, that's too bad." "Yeah, he's a little miffed that they decided to call him in this weekend," Corwin agreed. "Says it's part of a grand conspiracy to make him keep missing Canada." "Anyway," he went on, "as for what I'm doing here, that ought to be obvious. I didn't want to miss this." He grinned at Kate and added with a wink, "I've got a feeling about this show." Dorothy emerged from the access panel underneath the stage where she'd been connecting cables, noticed Corwin, and jumped, calmly and effortlessly, up out of the pit to land lightly in front of him. "Corwin," she said with a nod and a faint smile. "I was hoping you'd be here," he said, and gave her a hug, then held her at arm's length to look her over, shaking his head and tisking with a wry smile. "I saw the pictures from last time," he said, "but I didn't quite believe it. What an outfit." Dorothy, who was dressed and made up in the same gothic style as the last time she'd been to Sneaky D's, moved back a little and twirled around, then deadpanned, "I think it's quite becoming."
I won't dispute that," said Corwin.
"Hey," said another girl, pushing her way past Utena. "Do I have to introduce myself around here?" Corwin regarded her with a look of mild surprise. She was a girl about Utena and Kate's age, slim and pretty, with auburn hair done up in a style that looked a bit like an onion, and eyes of matching color. She was dressed in jeans and an unbuttoned blue frostproof flannel over an Art of Noise t-shirt, and, he was slightly jarred to note, wore a katana through her belt. She didn't look particularly combative, though, as she smiled at him and said, "Hi, Wakaba Shinohara. I used to go to school with Utena and Miki. You must be Corwin, the guy Utena's not dating."
"Wakaba," Utena exclaimed, but Corwin just smiled an easy smile and replied, "Yep, that's me."
He bowed formally, sweeping an imaginary hat from his head, and said, "Corwin the Ravenhaired of Avalon and Asgard, at your service." Utena gave him a bemused look as he straightened up, but he just grinned.
"Well, nice meeting you, Corwin," said Wakaba, "but I gotta go make sure nobody swipes the t-shirts. Maybe I'll see you later."
"Seems likely," said Corwin as she left the little group. Then he turned to Utena and said, "Lots of your old classmates finding their way here. That's cool."
"Yeah, I think Wakaba's the last one who's going to manage it, though," she said a bit wistfully.
Then she brushed it away and went on briskly, "Did you come straight here?"
"Yep, my ship's parked over at YYZ.
YYZ? Spaceport code for Toronto.
"Ah, well, come on and meet Dimitrios."